one more story I'd like to tell you a little about, because I got some recognition for this one. This was after I'd become what they call the division technical manager. And I got that job because I was recognized as being technically strong. And basically, I guess you'd have to call me the technical expert in the Rocky Mountain division, which went from New Mexico up to Montana and North Dakota. And we had a new sonic tool at that time, which it won't mean anything to you now, but it was called a borehole compensated sonic, and it was a neat device, and it really was a lot better than anything the competition had, but it had one problem that had cropped up not just all over, not in the Rocky Mountains or just all over the country, but all over the world, because it turned out that Houston built these tools, not just for us, but also for our Paris company. And so there they were used over in the North Sea, and they were used in Saudi Arabia and just all over the world. Anyhow, this tool was having a problem. It would, in certain sections of the borehole, it would, there'd be a terrible amount of noise, and by that, it would cause the tool to make erratic readings, and you couldn't get a good reading unless you really knew what you were doing. Well, since I was a technical expert, I was getting a lot of pressure to get the problem solved, but keep in mind that Houston had been working on it too, and they couldn't seem to solve it. And I went out to this well for Shell Oil one time, and it was north of Casper, and I went out there for another reason, though, and that was because they were testing a new telemetry tool they were going to use for future tools. And so an engineer from Houston was going out on that well, and I wanted to be there with him. And so we went out there, and, of course, the sonic was giving him fits. Now, by giving him, I mean the logging engineer fits. And I got in there, and, man, knowing what I did, I got a pretty decent log, because it took some judicious setting of the controls to do that. And it wasn't a perfect log, but it was a pretty good log. Anyhow, it was satisfactory, but I had to fight it all the way. And I rode back, when we went back to Casper, the engineer from Houston was riding with me, and I said, you know, there's that problem has to be tied to the caliper. I said, the caliper somehow is putting noise into the sonic circuit. And I said, there's crosstalk there. And he said, no, he said, Houston's been over that time and time again, and it just doesn't, it's not there. That's the circuit's perfect. And I said, well, it's there. I don't know how, but it's there. Well, I hadn't much more got back to town, and they had another well for Shell Oil. Well, Shell Oil is just like the big old grizzly bear, you know. The grizzly sleeps anywhere it wants to. And Shell Oil got pretty much what they want. And they had laid the law down to Schlumberger, you either get us a good sonic log on this or we're going to call a competition. Well, we didn't want that. So I get a call from my boss, and he says, Openshain, you get out on that well and make sure that you get them a clean sonic. I don't care how you do it. Well, I went over the day before. And the district manager over there, he was fit to be tied. He said, Shell is so cotton-picking mad at us, they're about to cut us off completely, and that's half our business. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, nobody's been able to solve it so far, but I'll see what I can do. So I went out to the instrument shop with the instrument technician, a guy by the name of called Gib Bruff, and we worked all day on it, and we had devices so we could lay it on the bench, and we could hook the caliper up and work the arms, and So we were doing that, and sure enough, when I'd work the arms, I'd get noise into the sonic system. And I kept working the arms back and forth, but then I'd check the whole circuitry in there, and everything was good. And something just didn't make sense. Well, I still hadn't decided exactly, and it was, 6-7 o'clock at night, and Gibbs decided he's going to go home. I went and got some supper and came back, and they decided to work on it because the job was for the next morning, and I was there by myself. Anyhow, I rigged it up so I could look at the scope and at the same time work the sonic, the caliper arms and watch the sonic signal. And I'd go down there, and every time I'd work the caliper arms, well, sure enough, it would screw up the sonic signal. And I'd keep looking at the circuitry, and I don't know whether you know what a choke is or not, but a choke is something it's an inductance that's put in a circuit to eliminate noise. And this particular circuit, it's where the caliper and the sonic signal came together. And each one of them had a choke in them. And, of course, the idea was to eliminate noise. But the interesting thing was about this, it was called a dual choke. And it was two chokes in one package. And they were hooked up separately. Well, I got to thinking, what if instead of two chokes, that was a transformer with a primary and a secondary? Now, if that's the case, then the caliper signal would be coupled through the transformer into the sonic circuit. And that might be the case. Now, if I take that out, the trouble is, if I take it out, when we get on a well, we could definitely have noise introduced from other areas. The first thing I did, I went ahead and I shorted it out because I knew I wouldn't have any noise introduced there in the shop. Then I went back and worked the caliper arms, and by golly, it cleaned up. It wasn't noisy at all. And so I said, that's got to be the answer. But how do I get around that? Well, the only way I knew to do it with the equipment that I had was to get another choke. Another dual choke, which was actually another transformer, and hook it up reverse of polarity. And that way, I had two signals, two caliper signals, coupled into the sonic circuit, but they were 180 degrees out of phase, so they canceled each other. And so I wired that in. And it was a pretty sloppy job, really. I'm not a real neat technician, but and that's why they hired somebody to do that kind of work instead of me. But anyhow, I got it in there, though it wasn't artistic, well, I went back then and I worked the caliper arms, and by golly, it was smooth, no problem. My theory worked. So by then, it was about between 5 and 6 in the morning. I'd worked all night. And so what did I do? I decided to go get some breakfast. And I did that, and I came back to the office about 7, and the manager was there, and he said, "I'm glad you're here." He said, "That job just came in, and they want us, they'll be ready for us at 10 o'clock. I got to send the truck right out." He said, "I hope you can go with it so we can get the best possible log." And I said, "I think I've solved the problem." I said, "But I want to go because I want to make sure it works on the well." And lo and behold, I headed out. Well, actually, what I did was I stayed around the office for a while, and the engineer that went on the well was a guy by the name of Ed Mixa really, he had about a year longer with the company than me. But anyhow, he was a good, reliable engineer. But I told him that what I'd done and that I'd be out there, and he decided he was going to let me run the Sonic, and he'd run the other tools. And so I get out there while he's logging, and I slept an hour or so in the car while I waited on him, and pretty soon they knocked on the window and told me they were ready for me, and they hooked up the Sonic tool and went to bottom. And this well was about probably, I don't know, 11,000 or 12,000 feet. I can't remember exactly, but it was extremely, the formations, typically in a well, the sandstones or the limestones, the hard rock, the hole stays at bit size through them. But when you get into the shales tend to swell, and when they swell, they break off and fall into the hole, and the sides of the hole then become very rough. So when the caliper goes up through a shale section, they're going in and out, they're moving a lot, and of course that's where the noise was always introduced. Well, in this case, Shell wanted, it had to be a smooth log over the whole hole, some, you know, 10, 11,000 feet of hole. And they were running what they call an SRS, which is a seismic reference service, and they have to have a good they had to have a good sonic log, because they integrate that or add up the total travel time for the whole 11,000 feet, and they compare that with their other measurements, and they were adamant they had to have a good sonic. So anyhow, we got down to the bottom of the hole, and it looked pretty good going down. And when I got on bottom, well, I just went ahead and set the controls to their normal setting. And then I decided I was going to watch it as we went up. And if we started getting into noise, well, I'd start riding the controls, because if I rode the controls, I had a downhole gain control and an uphole gain control, and I could work between them and smooth a lot of things out. Anyhow, we came into the first shale section, the real rough, and lo and behold, it just worked like a charm. There wasn't a bit of noise there. And we just keep coming up hole, and by the time we got to casing, which was at least 10,000 foot up hole, we had a perfect sonic log, not a bit of noise on it. And I was just pleased as punch, needless to say. And anyhow, we rigged down, and Shell Oil Company was just pleased as could be, and I drove back into Vernal, Utah, and when I told the manager, he was in hog heaven. And of course, I knew it was significant, and what I'd found. And he called the division manager, and the division manager was a guy that was a salesman. And it's not that I don't like salesmen, but he didn't appreciate technical things particularly. Anyhow, he didn't even say thanks, Open Chain. He just said, well, it's a good thing we got it solved. That's all he said. And that was about it. But anyhow, about that time, in fact, it was the next week, I believe, we had a division engineers meeting in Houston. Well, I was going to write a letter in, but I said, well, I'll just take what I found down to the meeting and tell them there. And so we get down to the meeting, and there's about, oh, between 30 and 40 people in there. There's people from Paris. There's the vice president of engineering. There was a design engineers for the Sonic. There was the president of the vice president of operations. There was a technical manager for the whole company there, and on and on and on. And then we had division engineers from every division. And needless to say, it was like it had been that way for the last 2 years. Every meeting we had, well, the first subject that came up was the noise on the Sonic tool. He said, the president of operations said, something's got to be done. He said, it's killing us. He said, everybody's giving the jobs to somebody else because we can't do them. And the people from the Sonic Division said, well, we've looked that circuit over and over again, and there's nothing wrong with it. We can't understand it. And they said, well, something's wrong with it. And they got all done talking, and I'm not one to mouth off too much. Anyhow, they finally quieted down a little bit, and I raised my hand, and they called on me, and I said, well, I know what the solution is. I said, I've fixed mine. And they came alive like you wouldn't believe it. Everybody was in awe, and they said, well, tell us what you did. And I started to explain it to them, and they said, well, get up and draw us a circuit on the board. And so I get up, and you got to keep in mind that I was kind of a introvert, I guess you'd say. Anyhow, I didn't like getting up in front of people. And here I had the vice president of engineering, the vice president of operation, I think even the president of the company was in there at that time, all these guys staring at me. And so I get up there and I draw my circuit. And I said, now, these two chokes, they're not chokes at all. They're a transformer. And about that time, the design engineer says, they are not. They're two chokes. And I said, no, they're not. They're a transformer. I'll guarantee you that. And he and the vice president of engineering jumped up and they left the room and they headed out. And about 2 hours later, they came back and said, by golly, you're right. And what happened was the specifications called for a dual choke, but somehow production had missed it, and they were putting in something that looked just like it, but it was a transformer. So these tools went out all over the world with transformers in them. And needless to say, everybody all over the world was having that problem, and lo and behold, I had solved it. Anyhow, I was one feather in my cap, and it was a good experience. I got recognition for it, and later on, the company technical manager came out and had a special dinner, and Esther and I were taken out to dinner, and along with the division manager, and I was given a plaque that recognized me as being the division engineer of the year, and I was given a TV and a few things. Anyhow, it was pretty neat, and I think that was good. But then I believe that was behind my finally being given the job as technical manager to offshore, and that's a whole other story. I wasn't successful there, but you'll find that in the book too. I guess that's most of my field stories with Schlumberger. It was a good company. I worked for them 31 years, and I worked hard. I worked long hours, but they treated me well, and most of the people I worked with were very good people, and I wouldn't hesitate to work for them again if I was young enough, and